Hello, comic creators. Welcome back to the Comics Experience Podcast, the podcast where we talk to you about the business and creative aspects of being a professional comic book creator. I'm Gamal, he's Andy, and today we're talking about money. Specifically, we are talking about the money that one has to spend as a comic creator if you are going to attend conventions. Now, Andy, you've been going to comic book conventions for how long now?
I've been going since about the late 90s. So,
okay,
like a century.
Okay, now in that 100 years, I'm sure that you've seen the prices of attending conventions increase significantly over the years. Is that accurate?
That is definitely accurate. Yeah, when I first started going, I wasn't going to the biggest ones, which were more expensive then, but it was not very expensive. It was like, heck, I was going in the 80s and like my parents could take me and they'd be like, sure, we'll just pay for the whole family to go in, because it was not expensive to go. There were a lot of things were different back in my day, Gamal. But yes, they were less expensive then, but I don't know, like, you know, the New York Comic Cons and the San Diego's, I don't know. I didn't start going to those until significantly later.
Okay. Now there is one important point that you actually brought up that I would like to point out before we start talking about the article that was in today's Comics Beat, is that when you're talking about attending conventions, there's a lot of different factors that can impact how much a convention is going to cost you as a professional. So for example, if you're going to a local con in a smaller city, then that convention is not going to cost you as much as going to a, you know, regional or a national or international convention in a much larger city, especially if you have to travel to that city. So for example, this weekend, I'm going to Heroes Con, which is down in Charlotte. Now, I don't live in Charlotte, I live in New York, but the cost of a ticket to get into Heroes Con, I believe is like $40, which is, you know, not the end of the world. If you're going to go to something like New York Comic Con for one day, if you're not a professional, it's like $75, $80. There's the other thing is you could actually get a pro pass and not pay the fan price. And that price is often also lower. But the article that we're going to be referring to and link into the description of the show notes came from Comics Beat, that actually pointed out the cost of a table at New York Comic Con in Artist Alley. Now, we're not talking about the big, you know, setups on the show floor with, like, you know, the statues and all the carpeting and all that stuff. That is beyond the scope of this discussion. But
yeah,
just to clarify,
there's like attending a show as a person who just buys a ticket and walks around, right? And then there's tabling, which is like Artist Alley. That's an individual, usually, what, 6 foot, 8 foot long table.
Yep.
I think they're 8 feet long tables with a little bit of space behind them, you know, where artists and writers can sell their books and sketches and things like that. And then there's being a vendor there, where you're getting like a full booth, and those can range from being 10 by 10 or 12 by 12 to hundreds of square feet. I mean, those are huge. Those are like on the convention floor. It's usually companies that have set up, and the price goes up with each of those levels that I just covered. But those are basically the three ways to attend a show.
Right. Now, the article in question actually was talking about the second tier. Basically, you're an individual, you get a table in Artist Alley in New York Comic Con, and it's like $560. Now, that cost is a very specific number that you have to, if you're a professional, you have to actually determine how many books you have to sell, or whatever it is that you're selling. If you're doing commissions, if you're selling merchandise or whatever, how many pieces of that merchandise you have to sell to cover the cost of that table. In economic terms, it is referred to as the return on investment. Now, $565, you might think, well, if I'm selling like books at $20 a pop, it's not that many books. However, the cost of the table is just one cost in a significant list of costs that all get factored into you be standing behind the table for 4 days in Artist Alley. You have to print your books. You have to ship your books if you're not going to carry them yourself. You have to figure out the cost of whatever setup your table is going to have, the table skirt or the signage behind it or anything else like that. You have to get to New York if you don't already live here. You have to find a place to stay if you're not going to be homeless for 4 days, which is not recommended. You have to figure out how you're going to eat, how you're going to get around, all of these different things. And when you add up all of those costs together, then you have to figure out how many units of whatever it is you're selling has to cover that cost of that table. And you might find that it's a lot of units. Does that economic analysis make sense, Andy?
It makes sense to me. Yeah. And the thing is that that table, I mean, just if you're flying somewhere and you're going into a hotel, a table, it could be less than half of your expenses. It could be more than half. Like, you know, if it's someplace that you can drive to or whatever, like there's all, like you were saying, there's all kinds of things to factor in. One of the things that I know a lot of people don't factor in is the cost of printing the books.
Right.
So if you're selling a book for $20, and let's say you're like, okay, I have to make $1,000. So you're like, I got to sell 100 books, except if those books cost you $5 to print, then you actually need to sell more than that. Mm-hmm. That is one of those costs that I think gets overlooked a lot. You know, or shipping the books. That's the other one. I mean, it gets kind of outrageous. Anyway, that's probably where you're headed next. What I like about these conversations is how you make being in comics sound so, so fun. That's the key to this podcast, is Gamal's insertion of fun into making comics.
Oh, yeah. It's just hilarity and shenanigans when I start to talk about, which is probably why, one of the reasons why people who are in comics really appreciate, you know, what it is that I talk about. People who are trying to get in comics or were excited about getting into comics, maybe not so much. Maybe they were like, you know what? I need to know any of these things. But I think in the long run, people do appreciate knowing, okay, they would rather hear it from me in a podcast than to see the bill on their credit card after New York Comic Con and go, wait, what am I doing right now? But the other thing that I will point out is that there are ways to reduce that cost to increase your return on investment to make the whole thing more fun. Let's put it like that. So I know quite a few people who do not get a table on their own. They share a table with like two or three people. They also share a hotel room with like two or three people. They may even drive or however they get to the convention with a group, because if you're spreading those costs across, you know, several other people, then the actual cost to attend the convention is lower and your return on investment is higher. The other thing that is very important to understand is that if you are getting a table as a professional in a convention, it doesn't have to be New York Comic Con, it could be any convention, that is, from a business standpoint, a deductible expense, which means, for all of you who are not familiar with the United States tax code, that the money that you spend on your business can be deducted from your income, which means when it comes time to pay taxes, you are paying less taxes. You can set it up in such a way, depending on how you do it, so that you are not paying any taxes at all when it comes time to pay taxes. You may even get a return. There's been always quite a few articles that go around every year around March, April, about how big companies like Amazon or all these other companies don't pay any taxes. This is one of the ways they figure out how to do it. You spend money on the business, and then that money is not counted by the IRS as part of your income, and therefore you don't have to pay taxes on it. Now, having said all that, you still have to have the money up front to spend before you can deduct it from your taxes on the back end. So any ways that you can reduce your actual cost of attending a convention is going to be helpful in the short term, whereas, you know, tax deductions and all that other stuff is going to be more helpful in the long term. Now, Andy, you pointed out one of the, I think, the major ways to save money by attending a convention, which is not tabling.
Yeah, I usually don't table. And for me, it's not necessarily a money issue, although that's probably part of it. I don't like selling. Like, I just, that is not something I enjoy doing. I don't enjoy being at a table trying to sell book after book. Other people love doing it and are good at it. It's not something I enjoy. And also because I do so many things in the comics space, so to speak, you know, I feel that having a table keeps me sort of tethered to the table, which is a different consideration. So for me, the it's way more beneficial for me to be able to walk, talk, network more easily than just be bound by whoever happens to walk by my table. So I can go take meetings at other booths, or I can take meetings offsite if I need to. So going to a convention and not having a table for me is helpful. I am a writer. I do have books to sell. I also run a publishing company, and I could be selling those books, but that doesn't make the most sense for me. So that's how I do shows. And I also try and set up meetings as much as possible beforehand. But if you're new to this and you're trying to get meetings and you're trying to meet people, then walking and not being tied to a table could be beneficial for you as well. I know plenty of people that get their table and are selling their book, and if they recognize that somebody's an editor or, you know, a fellow creator, you know, there is an inroad there, right? I mean, you've got a book to show them, and I can do more than this, and we can do this, and all that sort of stuff. So, you know, I'm not trying to make it sound like it's all or nothing either way. For me, it sort of comes down, like, there's benefits to both, but for me, it comes down to a preference, and I just prefer not being at a table. And yeah, I also try to stay with friends whenever I go. And part of that too is I like seeing my friends. So, but yeah, and I also travel alone. Like, my family doesn't go with me to any of the shows or anything, which it's probably their choice. That's probably their preference, but
yes, but it does reduce the overall cost.
It does reduce my cost for sure. Yeah.
Even if they don't want to go, but okay.
And I just want to go back to one other thing that we hit on, which is, I made a comment about how you made comics sound fun when you start talking about how expensive it is and losing money. And then you immediately went into a way to not lose money, and somehow you managed to make that sound even less fun because you started talking about tax codes. So,
listen, everybody has a superpower, yeah. Okay? I can make anything sound less fun if you give me enough time. Well, you actually brought up a point that I wanted to actually touch on probably before we wrap up, which is the all or nothing kind of concept with tabling and not tabling. And it doesn't necessarily have to be an all or nothing concept, depending on how you set it up. So like I mentioned before, if you go with other people, then you can kind of create a schedule where somebody is always at the table pushing the books, and other people are allowed to go and take meetings, be on panels, do other things, and they're not necessarily tied to the table. The other thing that I do see people do, which is something I don't recommend, is that they get a table and then they leave the table for several hours at a time, or maybe a day or two at a time, which always seems to me like you decided to spend money getting a table and then not use the table to make any of the money back because you're not there. The books can't sell themselves if you're not there. The other thing I would like to point out is, like you said, if you're just starting out and you only have one book, then it might not actually make sense to get a table, especially at a larger show. It might make sense because you're competing with hundreds, if not thousands, of other people to sell books. If you only have one book, you may not have the track record or the fan base in that very large show to move those units. It might make more sense if you have three books, four books, so that you have something that can appeal to multiple different types of people, increasing your chance that you'll actually sell the books and you will actually, you know, make your cash back. There have been some people that I know who, when they started out, they did, like you said, they didn't table for the first few years. And then once they started tabling, they were actually like selling out of inventory before the show was even over. Because again, you, like you said, if they're good at selling, they like selling, they're actually out in front of the table. They're not sitting behind the table because they're trying to move those books. And all of a sudden the books are gone. That's not the worst problem in the world to have, because then you're just standing by the table with, I mean, I guess, because you're standing behind a table with no books and people are like, where's the books? They're like, well, I don't have any more. I blew them out. So yeah, those are the other considerations that if you're going to start doing shows, I would recommend, and Andy, you should comment on this, starting with the local and regional shows first, not only to like control your costs, but actually to kind of understand how it is you're going to sell the books, what your sales pitch is going to be, and to reduce kind of the stress of doing it, as opposed to trying to jump into New York or San Diego or C2E2 as like your first convention out of the gate. Does that make sense?
Well, that makes a lot of sense. And I mean, that's how I started doing it. I mean, you know, first as a fan, I would, you know, I'd have to convince my parents to take me because I didn't have a driver's license, and those were always smaller shows because my parents, A, they didn't want to drive that far, and B, didn't want to pay that much money. So, but what was really nice about those shows, and I started going, my first shows were in the St. Louis area, you know, before Wizard World was even a thing, which is now maybe not a thing anymore. I can't remember.
Nope.
But Wizard World, I think, became the biggest show in St. Louis for a while. But there were these really small things. They were just like in a hotel, like sort of ballroom type of thing. And it was mostly dealers that would set up there. So you could go and try and find back issues that if you were into that, then, and they didn't have them in your local shop and the internet hadn't been invented yet. And that was sort of the main crux of what those were about. But there were always a few creators that would attend. And in those small local shows, it's usually a lot easier to actually have a conversation and sometimes even a longer conversation. I remember one of those shows, actually I wasn't at this one, but my brother went to one and wound up having this long conversation with the writer of the X-Men. And he was the head writer on the X-Men for a number of years. And my brother just got to chat with him about like ideas he was having about maybe stuff he'd want to do in the X-Men, and like a really, really cool thing. Now, my brother didn't particularly want to get into comics. I did. but, you know, I met some just wonderful creators at these small shows. And what that helped me do is it helped me figure out, A, how to relax and get over my fandom, which is helpful. You can be a fan of somebody, but you still have to be able to talk to them in a professional, calm manner without screaming. And it just helped me understand what shows are about. And so when I started going to more regional shows that were bigger and there were more creators and there were more panels that were interesting, it helped me just kind of like know what I was doing. So I was getting more out of the shows as I sort of stair-stepped up. And you can do that stair-step like over the course of a year, maybe like start with a local show, maybe hit a regional show a few months later. You know, if you're getting the hang of it, then keep going. The other thing that you pointed out was just how much in terms of selling, how much to have. And if you just have one comic book that you're selling for like $4 or $5, really mm-hmm. difficult to make your money back on the table, because probably the print run on that is going to cost you somewhere between $2 and $3 a unit anyway. So you're really talking about only a couple of bucks per unit. Whereas if you've got a mini series, you can, you know, you use sales tactics like it's a 4-issue mini series, like do a thing where it's they're $5 each, but if you buy all four, it's 15, right? Mm-hmm. Or, you know, whatever that works. Obviously, got to make sure those things work. But there's a lot of tactics you can do. But the more projects you have to sell, you know, you can turn one customer into 5 sales as opposed to only having the option of 1 sale per customer. And a friend of mine, Ryan Brown, who did God Hates Astronauts and 8,000 Genies and all kinds of stuff like that, he like merchandises his books really, really well. So he's had toy figures of characters from the books. He's had shot glasses. He's had little mini French fold posters, and he's had, you know, prints and cards and all kinds of stuff. So he can turn one customer who's buying one God Hates Astronauts book into buying the big book, but also walking away with all this other like cool stuff that they want and they pay for. And so, and he also said that generally, the profit on those other items tends to be higher, like your profit margin on those items tend to be higher than on a book, which is also helpful. Again, if you're trying to make that table back.
Yes.
Sorry, I just threw a lot out there, but I think there is a very reasonable approach where you can be cautious and still like progress quickly.
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. And the thing that I would like to close out with, because I know we're going to do another show on conventions right before San Diego, is that there are a lot of other factors, a lot of other benefits that come with attending a convention as a professional that are not necessarily tied to financial compensation. So if you're going to a convention and you're tabling and you realize that there are other things that you're going to be doing, you're going to be connecting with other professionals, you're going to be marketing your services or your ideas to other publishers, you're going to actually be getting ideas, you're going to be connecting with your fans, you're going to be doing a lot of the economic intangibles that can lead to more opportunities and more success later, then it may not necessarily be vital to cover 100% of the costs when you get a table, but you have to be aware of what it is that you're attempting to do, why it is you're attempting to do it, and what kind of dollar value you're attempting to attach to it before you get into it. I also do not table at conventions, even though I could theoretically set up a table and sell the books that I have. But I know that being out on the floor and being in attending the panels and all of that other stuff will probably yield greater results for me long term. It's not going to be the instant gratification of, okay, you sell a book, you get $20, and now you know you have $20. The meetings or the introductions you get at a convention, you may not actually get the benefit of that 2, 3, 4 years down the line, but there is that benefit that also has to be factored in to the whole kind of situation. Because I know you take a lot of meetings, Andy, and it's not that they necessarily turn into cash in like the next 2 weeks.
No, in fact, it's often meetings that I don't set up in advance that wind up being the ones that wind up producing something really interesting and something new. I'm not sure this is true anymore, but for like 10 years, it was true that I would set up a whole bunch of meetings going into San Diego Comic-Con, and I would always come out with something, with some sort of cool project or something. And I may not come out directly from that weekend with that, but like something, because I had a conversation with so-and-so, we wind up talking 6 months later or something. Like right. Like something always, and I don't always know what it is when I come out of the show. There's something's always come out of it. And I'd been going for like 10 years and I realized that in 10 years, I never had that thing. Sometimes there's more than one, but usually there's one kind of bigger one, right? that thing had never come out of a meeting I'd set up in advance. It always came out of some chance meeting, talking to somebody on a show on the show floor that I just happened to run into and I hadn't seen for years. Mm-hmm. And maybe they're at a new place and I didn't know they had changed jobs or whatever. So yeah, I mean the benefits of going to these shows, you know, there, if you approach it sort of like we were talking about in sort of a methodical way, the benefits tend to get bigger as they go along. But like you said, I mean, stay tuned for next episode, because that's, I think, really what we're going to get into is evaluating what the benefits, besides just a potential financial one, there are to going to the shows, and how to prep and do that well.
Yeah, yeah. I think what we're going to do in the next episode is we're going to talk about attending a comic book convention as a professional from a 360 degree perspective. We'll talk about what to do before you actually go to the show, what to do at the show, and what to do after the show is over, because there are key elements in each step that can actually make the entire process much more fulfilling and actually help understand or help. What is the right word that I'm looking for, Andy? Justify the cost of actually the time and money cost of going to the show. That's what the word I was looking for. Justify. All right. So since I'm running out of words, we're going to wrap it up there. All of the information, the link to the article that started off this in-depth conversation will be in the show notes. And like I said, in probably what, 2 weeks, we will have the second part of this fascinating conversation. Until then, I'm Gamal. He's Andy. This has been the Comics Experience Podcast, and have fun with your comics.